You're listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit nakedbiblepodcast.com and click on the support link in the upper right-hand corner. If you're new to the podcast and Dr. Heiser's approach to the Bible, click on New Start Here at nakedbiblepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Naked Bible Podcast, episode 317, Humanitarian Disaster Institute. I'm the layman, Trey Strickland, and he's the scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser. Hey, Mike. How are you doing? Are you well? You don't have a fever, do you?
No, I don't. We're well, and I think we're coping pretty well with the shutdown, the lockdown. Here in Jacksonville at Celebration, they keep us connected pretty well, and it hasn't made anybody stir crazy yet. I mean, I'll be honest, Joe. It's half of us are introverts anyway, so.
Yeah, I was born for this.
It's not a real uphill battle.
Yeah, I was born for this self-isolation. This is basically nothing's changed for me. Work from home. There you go. But yeah. No, I have a lot of medical clients. So it's been busy, busy, busy. It's amazing to see how people aren't letting people in. The doctors are going out to the parking lot to see the patients now. And it's just crazy. Or they're letting one person in at a time. Mike, it's like we're living in a movie. I mean, it's surreal.
Yeah, it is. It is. We've had a few. I wouldn't call them episodes, but just people, my daughters or Drina or whatever. I've just seen things. As they're either online or on those infrequent occasions where we actually venture outside the house. That's a good way to put it. Actually, you just see some unusual things.
Yeah, and it's history. I mean, people are going to be reading about this time period in time, forever. I mean, it's crazy mm-hmm. that we could say, yeah, we lived through the COVID-19, whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
Right.
But we need to come up with something.
Pandemic, I guess. Yeah.
There you go. Pandemic. Yeah. There you go. But Mike, I can only imagine that you're probably getting a lot of questions. Is this the end times? Is God mad? I mean, are you fielding a lot of?
Yeah, I do. I do, and there are, I'm getting requests for interviews and most of them are kind enough to sort of give me a heads up, this is why we're calling and what we want to talk about. So yeah, I'm seeing some of that. So I'll be doing a number of those things through April and I'm fine with doing that. I think I can probably contribute something positive there. But yeah, the focus has changed. Yep.
All right. Well, we're happy to have two guys on that's from Wheaton College that they created this Humanitarian Disaster Institute, which doesn't just cover the coronavirus, but also other disasters and how churches can respond and handle during those types of times. And hopefully we can give them a little bit of exposure, and people in churches that need these resources can go and utilize them.
Yep. Well, we have two guests with us today. For our audience, this is going to be a little bit different. We want to do biblical studies, topics, book studies, interviews, all that sort of thing. But everything else is sort of different now, at least for the time being. And so why not? Why should we be any different than different? And so I've decided to have two guests on. We have Dr. Jamie Otten, and you can correct my pronunciation if that is incorrect. Is it Aiton or Otten?
Aiton. Aiton. I respond to just about anything.
Okay. Well, that's too bad because Otten is a good Egyptian name. So Dr. Jamie Aiton is with us, and Kent, is it Annan or Anon?
Annan.
Okay.
We make it tricky. Both of us make it tricky.
Right. I have that Semitic Middle Eastern thing going on here because of my background. All right. Well, we again, these are our two guests for today, and I'm going to just read a little bit about them, and then we'll explain why we're having them on. So Dr. Aiton is founder and executive director of Wheaton. That's Wheaton University. I think it's a university now, correct?
College still.
College. Okay. Wheaton College. He's founder and executive director of the college's Humanitarian Disaster Institute and is a disaster psychologist, author, and speaker. He's been published in various outlets like the Washington Post, Christianity Today, Psychology Today, various scholarly journals in the field of psychology. And in 2016, he received the FEMA Community Preparedness Champion Award at the White House. And Kent, Annan?
Yep.
Got it? Okay. Kent Annan is Director of Humanitarian and Disaster Leadership. In this role, he works with Dr. Ayton to develop vision and strategy for growing and sustaining the MA degree in Humanitarian and Disaster Leadership program while managing its day-to-day operations, and teaching courses, advising, mentoring students, all the things that faculty have to do. He also co-founded and formerly served as co-director of Haiti Partners, which is a nonprofit focused on education in Haiti. And he's on the board of directors of Equitas Group, which is a philanthropic foundation focused on ending child exploitation in Haiti and Southeast Asia. He's a graduate of Princeton Seminary with an MDiv, teaches adult education at his church. And I have a biographical note about you that you're married, your wife's name is Shelley, and you have a daughter and a son. But Dr. Ayton, how about you? We don't want to skip your family.
Yes, I'm married, and my wife is a nurse midwife. Okay. And I have three daughters.
Sweet, sweet. Well, again, our audience might be wondering why, you know, they don't sound like biblical guys. They don't sound like biblical scholars. What's going on? This is rocking my world. Well, they have produced a manual that you can find online. And maybe the easiest way to locate this is if you just go to Google and you put in Wheaton Coronavirus Resources, it's going to be the top hit on the search results that are returned. And so they have produced a manual for responding, preparing the church really, and responding to coronavirus. And so we heard about this, and I thought, you know, this would be a good idea to have the two of you on and talk about, you know, what's going on, and also, again, how churches can intelligently respond to this. I forwarded the link once I saw it, you know, to our church, and they, you know, they're quite a ways down the road in terms of certain things that have been sort of forced on us in response to this. But they actually thought it was a really good resource too. So this is why we want to do this topic, and I think the best way to begin this is to have both of you sort of give us some context for why you created the manual. And then I'd also like you to loop in the fact that you've been doing an online summit with, you know, church leaders, you know, really, I guess, internationally all over the world in regard to this. So if you can just, you know, give us some context for this, and then I want to jump into the manual a little bit specifically.
Yes. Well, thanks for asking. I think we, you know, Jamie started the Humanitarian Disaster Institute 9 years ago, and really trying to bring together how to do scientific research into best responses and preparation for disaster. And then that led to starting this master's degree program. So Jamie and I are working together, and just as we saw coronavirus, you know, out at a distance, as all of us did, mm-hmm. getting closer and closer, we were already thinking, well, how could we respond and help the church in other places respond? And then as it got closer, we thought, wow, this is not just us responding to help the U.S. church after an earthquake or after a tornado or a hurricane, and this isn't helping in some other country. This is coming here to the American church. So we quickly tried to pull together our experience and research and from studies and everything to put together a manual that we'll talk about soon. And then we also just realized, oh, this is developing so much. We also ought to hold an online summit so that people are really getting to hear the best voices from around the country, this resource of conversations where mm-hmm. people can go find inspiration, but also, you know, like you do in your podcast here, like find depth as well. So people are thinking from a Christian, faithful perspective, thinking deeply, but also on a really specific topics of church finances or helping disabled people in our congregation or elderly people, or, you know, how do we preach in this context? We really thought, oh, let's get together this broad group of people to respond to this moment. And that was the idea. And this summit that people can go for free registration still to get on and register and really hopefully be inspired. And it's available through Easter this year. How about you, Jamie? Your thoughts on that?
Sure. And you can find out more about the online summit by going to COVID-19churchsummit.com. Like Kent mentioned, you can register there and then be hooked up to all the free resources that are there. You know, this issue for us, you know, I don't think anyone was prepared for a pandemic, but it's something that as a research institute and training center that we've been thinking about for quite some time. About 7 or 8 years ago, we were doing research with through a grant from the CDC and Department of Public Health in Cook County and Chicago, because one of the things that we had noticed from searching and doing research around the globe around disasters was oftentimes how it would later be followed by a public health crisis. And so that was something we realized was a big gap in many churches' preparedness. And so started doing more research to understand those challenges and developing tools, and had continued to be mindful of those types of issues. So then when this pandemic started, we saw the outbreak starting to happen. We were positioned to be able to leverage all those previous resources and draw from that previous experience to be able to create this new manual.
Yeah, there's a lot of good information. I mean, just to encourage people to go up to the site that was just mentioned, you know, COVID-19churchsummit.com. I mean, there, you know, the manual, again, you can find just by Googling, as I mentioned earlier. But there, if you go to that site, there's a lot more information as well. And, you know, but I mean, I have a number of things I'd like to just I'd like to just jump in on, but I think I'm going to try to behave here and sort of start in with our plan here. In the manual, the original manual, again, that we got the link to, that, you know, sort of stimulated, you know, the interest here to have you two on, you go through 6 steps. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to try to touch on, at least in summary form, each of those steps. And the first one is get organized. And then the action, you have action items on each one of these that are really, you know, conveniently laid out. You know, start with prayer, reflect on scripture, and leverage existing ministries and activities. Could you tell us a little bit about that? And I'll tell you what I'm specifically interested in here. I would like, after you summarize, to hear you. I'm just kind of curious as to what your experience is, because I have already, and I do a lot of interviews. Let me just put it this way. I'll try to not, you know, give too much information here. I do a lot of interviews, and I'm starting to get asked increasingly in the last week as part of the interview, you know, can you talk to us about, you know, specific ideas like, you know, what's the cause of this? Is this God's judgment on the world? I mean, you know, is this like part of end times prophecy? You know, you know, I'm prone to get, you know, those sorts of questions. And I'm just wondering if you've run into that. So what stimulates that is the section you have here on reflect on scripture. But I'd like you to just summarize the first step about organization. But I am curious as to if you've had to tackle that at all.
Yes, I can jump in, and then I'll let Jamie solve the theodicy question next.
We're going to have John Peckham on it. Later with him, the Odyssey of Love.
So I take the easier one.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, jumping to the practical before we go into the more theological is, we really do. And in this is comes out of Jamie's thinking, but thinking what we want to respond to crises or do preparedness that's not setting up something that's apart from us, like, oh, suddenly I have to become like a mini CDC, or like, oh, I've become like our county's health center. It's not that as a church. What we want to do is see where God's called us, root our response in theology, God's strengths and gifts that God's given us, and then act out of there. And I think for a couple of reasons, it stays true to our calling. It's also what will probably keep it a sustainable response, right? Instead of just kind of getting outside ourselves and sort of flailing some, that this is a best practice for responding. So that's very much why we want to start with prayer, reflect on scripture, so we're grounded in the hope and faithfulness, and then also think about, where has God called us? What are our existing ministry? For example, do we have a really strong ministry with with elderly people and think, okay, well, then it's not that we have to go start something, some new health ministry. Let's mm-hmm. lean into that. And how can we really do that? And none of us can do everything, especially when it comes to a pandemic like this. And so that's how we sort of think of having the right thinking and theological grounding, and also responding out of the call that God's given us. God may call us to something new, but likely in something like this, the best place to go is to respond with our strengths that God's already called us to.
Yeah. Part of wisdom is not reinventing wheels that don't need to be reinvented.
Yeah, exactly. What would you add there, Jamie?
Well, I think we've only got, 40 minutes for me to solve the Odyssey problem. So I'm going to try.
I left you some time.
Yeah, that's funny. So in terms of kind of with that theodicy issue, you know, that I think that is a real issue that many people struggle with during times of not just this current pandemic, but disasters. And it's actually something that empirically that we've researched in a number of different disaster zones to see how do people make sense and make meaning and try to understand, you know, mm-hmm. these tragic incidents. And one of the things that we have found is especially for people that, you know, are directly impacted, that they're more likely to have what we call a meaning violation, which is a more or less, just a psychological jargon there for the way that we understood the world has suddenly been disrupted. And one of the things that we have found is that those who tend to embrace a theodicy of more of a punishing God or kind of a judgment or a wrath type of perspective tend to struggle more in terms of overall emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me because I think, you know, there are myriad reasons for this, but I think even Christians are mired in this in a very performance based relationship with God. It's as though they understand the gospel at one point and then sort of drift into this. Well, you know, I better, you know, go through my checklist every day and do it perfectly and in the same order, or else God won't be as happy with me today mm-hmm. as he was yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, so that doesn't surprise me. I would imagine on the site, you're going to have at least, you know, some direction or some resources in regard to that to help, you know, people think, you know, through that, think more clearly about that. Or if you don't, you know, what have you found helpful there?
Yeah, so through many of our interviews, there's quite a bit of theological discussion that does come up. And one of the things that I was really encouraged by was just hearing the message of grace and humility that was presented by those that we had the chance to interview.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, so we do have some of like on that site, and then our own site on the Wheaton College page, we have some, and we'll have more sort of biblical references and like ways to think about this. And then I worked in Haiti for a long time, and so that's part of what shaped my kind of understanding of how to respond in this. And I wrote a book called Aftershock, Searching for Honest Faith When Your World is Shaken in the months after the earthquake there. And it's very much my psalm. It's sort of structured as Psalm 13. And so I think especially and saw the Haitian church wrestling with this. I myself was wrestling with this, just with, you know, over 100,000 people dying in that earthquake. And so so I think we very much lean into this, but like Jamie said, we lean into it with humility and with seeking, you know, not necessarily with clean or clear answers mm-hmm. that solve it, mm-hmm. But knowing that we faithfully need to step into these questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's obviously that's the right place to start. Step two in your manual is create a health team. What do you mean by that?
Well, one of the things that we really encourage is that the church leaders don't try to take on handling this crisis all by themselves. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot of research over the years studying clergy and pastors from around the globe, including humanitarian aid workers as well, and have found that kind of notion of the lone wolf model, mm-hmm. you know, where just trust me, I've got this, just does not work. That, and I think we're seeing the failings of that in churches around the U.S. right now. But that's one of the reasons why we're really encouraging pastors not to try to go through this alone, to form a team around them and find a champion from their congregation that can help to take on some of this responsibility, also so that it doesn't cause them to burn out or become overstressed, so that they can continue to do the things that they need to be doing. The other thing by pulling together a team is with a pandemic related type of issue, no one person can guide an organization all by themselves. It really does take a team effort that you need to tap the individuals from your congregation and leadership that have a diverse skill set to be able to help make these difficult decisions.
Yeah, I don't know if you'll hit this later, but I'll tell you what this makes me think of. You know, we had a conversation, you know, where I'm at now in Jacksonville just this last week. And I felt led to just send off a few notes, you know, afterwards, basically saying, if this continues, you know, just the lockdown, just the response, you know, lots of people are going to lose their jobs. I mean, this is a real economic threat. That's, you know, putting it mildly. And so to me, it just seems, and this is a very large church, but I think any church would have somebody like this. But you're going to have business people in your church, and, you know, they should be encouraged to modify what they do to online when they went, you know, on the other side of it, when they do recover, hiring people within, you know, their congregation. I mean, this is just Acts chapter 2 kind of stuff. You know, where those who have the means to, you know, help the ones that, you know, suffer the most through it. These are just practical things. You know, teach, you know, take your expertise and teach somebody else in your church to do that. Hire them. You know, adapt it to an online environment. You know, teach people how to do this. I mean, if you're going to need people to help you, well, you know, you probably sit among a few hundred, you know, on any given Sunday. And you assume that they're settled and they have jobs. Well, you know, if we ever get back to meeting as a congregation, there's going to be a lot of people in there who aren't. And it just seems that the church is a real resource in terms of business people and people with other, you know, expertises that just really don't get tapped because it's not church stuff, but they're there. You know, they're there in all sorts of practical ways. So I don't know if that's what you were thinking in step four, which we're not there yet, the community outreach or not. But I like what I'm hearing here. You know, a negative way to put it is, you know, to the pastor or other a small number of people who feel like they're, you know, it's our burden to carry the church through here is you really need to stay in your lane. I don't want that to sound negative, but your church chances are has lots of people with specific skill sets that we would really benefit from, you know, if you take the team approach. But is that kind of what you're angling for here too?
Yes, definitely. I think that, like you said, it is this moment. So we find in different disaster responses and like this, that you really need the gifts of everybody to come together. You know, no one can do it alone, and we want to encourage that sharing. And I think you're exactly right. It's not just for this moment of crisis, but, you know, in the months ahead and then in the aftermath as well. You know, we want to tap into each other's strengths and let those shine through. And I've even heard some, you know, we see this creativity bubbling up, kind of like you're referring to. What's encouraged us some too is hearing about some of these gifts that actually can be shared cross church. So not even just within the church, but, you know, if someone has like a church is great at live streaming and they have, you know, three HD cameras that can do it, but there might be a little church that doesn't have a budget or hasn't been live streaming. And so I think if we do what you said, but even think about beyond the church walls, that there's going to be a new chance for collaboration.
Yep. You know, lend them a camera, show them how to use the thing. You know, I still have I don't have teenagers. Well, I have one teenager, but a couple millennials, you know, and it's like, it just seems that's a demographic there that has a real specific skill set, especially right about now.
Sure.
Yes, exactly. Really get tapped into.
Well, and you know, on the flip side of that, the other thing that we've seen is that there's also a number of larger churches that can also learn a lot from some of our smaller congregations across the U.S. I know so many large churches that already have all the technology, but suddenly when they can no longer utilize their building, we're really kind of frozen about, well, how do we keep a community going? You know, in the online church summit, we had the opportunity to do an interview with a ministry couple that are part of a church plant that for the last 5 years have had this small congregation in an under-resourced community. And church actually was held on Sunday mornings in the local community center. So you had a pickleball court across from where worship was happening. And what was really interesting in talking to them was that they had the perspective that the fact that they've never had like their own building, in some ways, actually, they felt better equipped to be able to respond for loving their neighbors in a time like this. So I think there's just a beautiful image of how we can come together as the full body of Christ and being able to respond.
Yeah, that's actually a big deal. Go ahead.
Just one more thought, just circling back to this kind of big theological question, I think the kind you take on in here for this online summit that we just did, that we've referred to. One of the conversations I had was with an interview with a pastor. Well, actually, there are pastors from China who zoomed in and Uganda. Mm-hmm. Now there's a refugee pastor here in Chicagoland. He's a Sudanese refugee who came over. And so was asking him some of this question, and sort of say, I framed it. And how could, you know, churches be looking out for refugee or immigrant churches? And that was beautiful. He came back and said, yes, we can be more, you know, kind of food security, and there can be issues where we're more vulnerable. But then he said, you know what? We also have something to give right now. This is paraphrasing him. Many of us have been through so much loss. Like we know how to pray in these moments. We know how to be faithful in these moments. So he said, don't forget to turn towards us, because, you know, in a sense, he was saying, like, we have the theological depth and experience to take us through these hard questions that the American church, of course, on an individual level, there's lots of suffering, and life includes mm-hmm. suffering, but there's this wider range of suffering that we're entering into, that we want to look to our sisters and brothers also kind of in the immigrant and refugee communities that may be really helpful to us in these moments.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to functioning as community without big buildings and holding big events, those are the field experts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really are. They've been there for quite a while. They know what to do. So yeah, I would hope that more people would listen, you know, going in the other direction. Mm-hmm. You know, it just makes a lot of sense, you know, because they've been through, you know, a lot. They just know how to function, you know, in without a lot of the trappings, you know, that we sort of get used to in the West, you know, in sort of the wealthier, you know, kinds of settings and situations. Let's see here, creating a health team, develop a communications strategy. You know, my little addendum here would be, good grief, this is important. I mean, I've already learned this, you know, just in our own context. And that, here's what I'd like to hear your thoughts on. Okay, what do you mean in this step? And I'm hoping that there's some element of it about what the sources of information are,
yeah.
You know, like where the communication, you know, happens. Go ahead.
You know, I think you're spot on there, that one of the most important things about having a good communication plan is to make sure that we're getting information from well-resourced and vetted places, because there can be so much misinformation and people turning this into a political issue rather than the public health issue that it actually is. Mm-hmm. And it can get very confusing. And so we just really encourage people to make sure that it's better to over communicate, you know, than not communicate enough. And so you want to let people even know how you're going to be communicating, when you're going to be communicating with them, what means are you going to be communicating with them, and to make sure that you're providing ongoing regular information to help decision making.
Yes, exactly. And I think if we do that, and then one of the things we've been talking about as well is just, you know, all the way from that to the people, to the strategies. And also we find in disasters, it's really important to communicate how you're going to communicate, you know, mm-hmm. so that there's a comfort in doing that. So the technical side of how do we all become Zoom experts now, and the Skype and all that. But then there is something, I think, as people, if you're in a leadership role at all, to make really clear, here's how we're going to communicate, you know, the right sources, like you and Jamie just said. And then here's the timing. You're going to get something every Wednesday and then every Friday about how worship's going to happen this week. Or, you know, I think communicating how you're going to communicate are really valuable in this moment.
One of the things you mentioned in this step in the manual is a call down procedure, you know, the phone tree. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, I think one of the strengths with all the advances in technology in the last handful of years is that many churches are better prepared to be able to respond and to navigate the crisis, especially around communication issues. But one of the big concerns that we've had, and one of the things that was really stressed in our recent online summit, was just hearing the awareness about how many people in many of our congregations and communities don't have access to the same technologies that others may. You know, so thinking particularly of those that may be elderly or, you know, have any types of health issues, could be an economic reason for a number of different reasons that they may not be able to have access or know how to use technology in the same way. And so we want to make sure that those individuals aren't left out and forgotten. We want to make sure that there's no one falling through the cracks. And so we encourage the church to think back to how did they communicate 5, 10, maybe even 20 years ago. And one of those is to bring back the call tree. So maybe your church, it was like mine, had a prayer chain where you know, it could be activated to you know, bring up an important issue and get everybody involved. And so we need to bring back some of those techniques now to where we're at to make sure that we're caring for those that are most vulnerable.
Yeah. You know, look, I'm going to be honest. There are certain technologies I know how to use. And there, if my security, you know, in any disaster depended on Facebook, I'm doomed. Okay. It has my vote for the most confusing thing on the internet. I don't use it. I just turn it off. It's just hopelessly confusing. But for other people, it's going to be other things or even most or all of this technology. I mean, I think of my mom. My mom has, I don't know if I can call it a cell phone, but she's got a phone, but doesn't have email, does not use email.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, your church is going to have a number of people and, you know, you, as the bigger your church is, the more the numbers are going to climb that you might think you have everything covered here with Facebook, and, you know, Twitter and Instagram and, you know, all this stuff, apps on the phone. And you could be leaving in a big church, several hundred people just like totally in the dark. I mean, they don't have any means of getting to the information, and it's never going to get to them as well. So I was glad to actually see this in here, that we might want to rethink exactly how we're doing this, you know, so that people aren't missed.
Yeah, for sure. And I know, like, our pastor and our church, a couple pastors, like, they went that first Sunday when the service was canceled, and they just sort of stood at the doors. Because they figured, oh, some people aren't going to get, you know, between emails and phones, people are going to fall through the cracks. And I just mentioned that as an example to illustrate what you're saying is, like, throughout this manual, Jamie and I wanted to point people to think, like, where are the blind spots or where are the people who won't get our communications? Because those are often the people, not always, but often the people who are also most vulnerable. And so we want to, like, sort of build layer upon layer of safeguards to make sure that we're able to be reaching them and supporting them through this time.
What online or print resources for information would you recommend? Again, just to throw this out. I don't watch news to begin with, but especially, you know, seeing the eruption of this, one of the first things I did, you know, other than continue my practice of not watching the news, was to go up to Johns Hopkins, you know, the website where they maintain their information on this, and subscribe by email. And they're really good about giving you, you know, 3 or 4 updates a day. You know, I mean, are there other sources like that that we're, just to draw an analogy with what we do on this podcast regularly, we value primary sources here. We're not interested in the filters. Okay. We value primary sources. And so I view the media just as a general dilution because, you know, they have time factors here, but where can people actually go for really good information?
Well, and you mentioned Johns Hopkins, and one of the other resources that I really like that they have presently is their online dashboard that also provides a really helpful visual where you can see the pockets of outbreak of how things are spreading in real time. So just a really valuable resource there. Another place that we encourage others to look is to the CDC. And if you go to the CDC website, you'll find that they actually have some specific resources for faith and community organizations that are very helpful. So CDC being a really trusted place to go for information. Also the Department of Health and Human Services. And there you'll also find the Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Opportunities that have released some new tip sheets and resources for faith communities around time of this pandemic. Another organization that I found to be very useful is Healthcare Ready, which is a nonprofit organization that has long provided disaster response and have a strong epidemiology background and are another great place to stay up to date on important information.
Yeah, that one I'd never heard of. So I'll have to check that out. You know, like I said, we like primary sources here. You know, we even if you're a media person and you do a good job, even if you're the rare individual that's informed and fair, you have 2 minutes to do something. Like, what can you do? you just have to. People have to get to the really good sources of information, and then I think that would help tremendously. But a lot of people,
if you're looking for a shortcut to that, if you go to our preparedness manual or our response manual that you mentioned, inside there, we actually talk about exactly what we're talking about now and provide direct links to those primary resources. Yeah. And then also our institute and Kent and I are also both very active on social media. And one of the things that we try to do is to be good stewards of, like what you were saying, kind of filtering through what is helpful media and what might be, you know, unhelpful, and trying to make sure that we're only sharing the best information. So, for example, if you're on Twitter, we started the hashtag COVID19Church, and it's been viewed over 1.5 million times of people there sharing information, posing questions, and resources. So that's another good way to get connected to some good information.
Your fourth step is focus on church and community outreach. Can you unpack that for us?
Yes, I think some of this is what we've been talking about. So providing vetted information and trusted resources is important, and also focusing on underserved, you know, people and communities. So I think in that case, we've just covered, you know, in this conversation, a lot of what we talked about there. But then also would think, okay, let's think about our church, and maybe there's an element of putting the, you know, putting the air mask on, oxygen mask on first on the plane, so that we can help others. But we don't want to just stop at the church's doors or the members of the church. Then we want to think, oh, are there other communities nearby that we can help serve? Is there a retirement home? Is there a potentially like a community of immigrants who maybe don't have the same access to information or other resources nearby that we have some relationship with, and we need to do more. We talked in the online summit with one of our colleagues at Wheaton College who talked about he has a Center for Faith and Disability, and he works with that community. And it was really beautiful. He said, you know, okay, don't feel awkward. Like, if you know about families who are impacted by disability and individuals, like, even if you haven't kind of reached out to them before, like, this is a moment to reach out and see if you can help, and to do it with listening, you know, not assuming you know exactly what they need, but they may have mobility issues, they may have other kind of resources or medicines, but we want to make sure we're caring for the church, but also that we're looking out beyond that to people who we can serve.
Yeah, we're in our situation here in Florida. I don't know where this is going to land yet, but they're, again, it's because it's a big church. They have a couple very large buildings, but I know they're already talking about possibly opening them if there's, that's for blood and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any church can do that. You know, it doesn't have to be a big scale, but, you know, those that have the physical facilities, you know, you might run into the situation where that's just, you make yourself indispensable to your community. And that's how, to me, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, especially as we could transition into step five here, strength and preparedness through collaboration, because, you know, whether we like it or not, there is a, I don't know if I'd use the word adversarial, but maybe there's sort of a hermeneutic of suspicion here between churches and the government, you know, just at all levels here. And so that there's going to be tension there. There's going to be some friction, you know, but to look for ways to sort of move beyond that, I think would be helpful down the road. I don't know if that's included in your thinking, but let's talk about step five as well, the collaboration.
Yeah, one of the things that we really try to stress is the importance of working together. And so, you know, we think that starts both within our churches, within our communities, but also thinking, how do we fit in and how might we collaborate both at the local, state, and federal levels, and what types of resources are available. So, for example, one small way that I would encourage churches to be engaged is to reach out to your local public health agencies as you're trying to make major decisions, to ask what are they advising and consult with them. So we're not saying that you go to work for others, but that rather you work with others.
That's any other suggestions there? I mean, because I guess I'm curious. In your online meeting, did you get any of that? Any of the uneasiness about the relationship between church and state there?
I think I've seen some circulating, like more in the media, but for us, we haven't heard too much. And I've heard really positive conversations about pastors being on calls, say, with the mayor's office, and you know, the mayor of Chicago reached out to us, and we had a conversation and shared about our resources. Our town that my wife and I live in, they're doing a weekly call with clergy, and they've done some things like you're just talking about vulnerable people. They saw the church is caring for a lot of vulnerable people, elderly people in town, and then as the clergy and the kind of town officials were talking, thought, oh, they could actually check the water bills, because people over 65 get a discount on their water in our town. Mm-hmm. And so that was a way to check the rolls to see who else might be being missed in this moment. So I think that's a great example of positive interactions, of seeing who might fall through the cracks and the kind of collaboration that can be there. So I think there is some suspicion out there, especially when it comes to the broad federal level. But I think that there's a lot of, and I'm not saying there should be a suspicion, but I think that's there. But I think at a local level, there hopefully can be, you know, trust forged and real opportunities to serve together and be sharing good information and finding out how to serve those who might be in need in this moment.
Yeah, in our internal discussions here, again, the ones that I'm privy to in meetings, it's easy to see how, you know, let's say you have a church, again, that doesn't have a whole lot of, we'll just say, like financial resources, you know, to help people within the congregation, you know, pay for rent or utility bills or whatnot. And in some cases, to me, it's easy to see that if you're not thinking this way, you know, in any collaborative sense, you not only may not have your own resources to help, but you may not have any awareness at all of what is actually out there in terms of the community. And so you can't even really pass on good advice, you know, at that point. You know, not only can't I help you pay your electric bill, but I actually don't really have any idea what you might do. And to me, that's not, you know, a good thing. It's nice if you have at least one, you know, one or two people in the church that are sort of tuned in to this. And, you know, oftentimes churches, if they have like ministries to the homeless, they're going to know, you know, sort of what agencies are out there and what they do and what their limitations are. But in some contexts, it's not difficult for me to imagine at all that you have churches that literally can't even give you good advice, which I think is a shame. So this is something, again, I think, you know, should be encouraged, you know, to at least become informed. Step six, we have adapting to changing needs. Okay, so if you go through the first five, what I read step six as, okay, you know, we've been through the first five, we kind of know what we're doing, you know, we got the boots on the ground, we have a plan, you know, we have a team, you know, we sort of have some direction here, and then all of a sudden something changes. Is that correct? You know, you just sort of like, you know, reevaluate and then go from there. Is that what you're talking about in that step?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that Kent and I have joked about in the past is that having done this disaster and international development work for a number of years is that typically you always go in with a plan. And by the time you hit the ground running, the plan's already obsolete. You
know? Right.
So we just encourage people to go in with that knowledge. And I think this pandemic is a perfect example of that. You know, we just see how rapidly, sometimes on a weekly and sometimes even a daily basis, we're seeing things change in our communities about what we thought we knew the day before, and suddenly things rapidly changing. So you just want to build in that sense of flexibility into how you're doing your planning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't get paralyzed either by the sense that something's going to go wrong. I mean, I always think of I like General Patton. Okay. I'm a World War II fan, and his famous quote of, "I'd rather have a good plan today than a perfect plan 2 weeks from now." there's a lot to be said for that.
Well said. We might borrow that.
That's George S. Patton's. Right. It's not me. But I mean, you know, you look at the context that he was in, it's like, yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's good thinking right there.
I think another thing that circles back some to the both the theology we talked about at the beginning and planning and some of the research that the Institute's done that Jamie's led with other colleagues from around the country. Humility is key here. I think it's theological humility and where we're seeking God together, humility and not having perfect answers in a changing environment, humility that you were mentioning about, like, we need all the gifts of everybody in the church, you know, not just the leadership. And so I was actually talking with Brenda Salter McNeil, a pastor and professor who's done a lot of work on racial reconciliation. She thought one of her hopes coming out of this was growing in sort of a humility of born of empathy, you know, for other people who are suffering like this, and even learning to listen across racial sort of lines and tensions that happen often. And so I think that's one of my prayers and hopes too, is, and we talked about this in the manual, but then even going beyond that, that this is a time to grow in humility, you know, as we all realize, like, again, that we're not in control here, but that we rely on God and we rely on each other in moments like these. And it's good to enter these moments, not paralyzed, but acting and planning with humility.
Yeah, that it's a nice thought to think that this could actually put a dent in the tribalism of the culture, which, you know, just seems to be growing, you know, all the time. I'm curious, you know, both of you have had experience with Haiti. You know, as you think about what you've seen there and what you've been involved with there and what's going on now, do you see any clear points of analogy, either negative or positive? I mean, how has that sort of helped you think about this in maybe one or two specific ways?
For me, I think one is, you know, I've worshipped in the weeks after the earthquake in Haiti next to a pile of rubble that used to be the church that my wife and I attended, and, you know, brokenhearted, but praying and worshiping together. And so I definitely carry that faith, where I felt like I was being carried by those who had lost so much right near the epicenter of the earthquake into this moment. And I think in positive ways, as I see the church here in the U.S. responding with creativity, and that the church is the people, not the building. So I feel like that's one of the things I've carried into this. And also just, again, this is echoing what we've already said, but seeing the way people and the community need each other, you know, to get through. Mm-hmm. Through moments of crisis. So those aren't new, but I do feel like I carry a certain hope or a faith that's been tested some in good ways, to see that those two things, if we're kind of humble, if we're worshiping together and helping each other out, then this too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
The story you shared is very similar to what first came to mind for me. I still have this memory from the first time being there. After the earthquake, and similar to what you described, a church that was just in rubbles, and this particular church that we had gone to visit, there was still a number of the bricks that had been left, even though they'd cleared off a lot of the rubble, and had left those as kind of a memorial to those that had died actually worshiping that Sunday. And I just remember reading the names that people had etched onto those bricks, and just how heavy that felt, and that sense of lament that kind of washed over me. And as I walked alongside this pastor down the road a little ways, just feeling the weight of this, suddenly I started hearing this hymn, just these voices that were just joyful. And the church had relocated not far from there. And here they were now worshiping. And I just kind of remember standing there in that moment between both this amount of sorrow and lament, but then also this hope and joy and trust in God to bring us through these difficult times. And so I just want to encourage others to learn to be in that middle place, that it's okay to struggle and there will be joy again, but it's hard to sometimes stay in that place in the middle, but that's where we often need to be most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be a great lesson for the church if, you know, what comes out of this is that just remembering that the church is the people and not the buildings or the events. I mean, that would have a profound ripple effect, or it could and should. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully, you know, Lord willing, a sense of that'll get recovered. Lord willing. Well, I want to thank both of you for, you know, doing this, you know, taking some time out. I know you're probably in some demand, and then with the online thing, it might be difficult to, you know, carve some time out. But, you know, hopefully, you know, we can give this more exposure, you know, through the podcast, and people, you know, can find these resources that may not be apparent, you know, to them that they exist and can benefit from them. So thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah,
thanks for having us. Really appreciate it. Great conversation with you.
All right, Mike. Well, that's a great conversation. Very warranted. And I hope people go visit COVID19ChurchSummit.com again to visit their online summit. And there's some great speakers. I was just looking at the speakers. And I think there's a word by the Surgeon General. So it's pretty cool. And there's lots of people from lots of different backgrounds. And we'll have links again on the NakedBiblePodcast.com.
Yeah, you know, I have a feeling that, you know, here we are, we're almost in April, but I have a feeling that this will be timely for quite a while. And I don't think it's going to sort of become obsolete anytime soon. So, yeah, hopefully listeners will, you know, go and check out, at least, you know, flip through the websites, the web pages, and find some useful stuff. Because I think, again, it, you know, this is going to be useful for some time to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Hope some churches can gain something from this podcast. Well, with that, Mike, I want to thank Jamie and Kent for coming on, and we want to pray that everybody out there stays safe and well. And with that, I want to thank everybody else for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.